Welcome to the Intuition Conversations. My name is Megan Field. I'm an intersectional social justice activist, an intuitive embodiment facilitator, a Koya teacher, a licensed practical magic coach, and an Irish Celtic moon mana practitioner. I'm a Gemini polymath with an insatiable passion for learning, empowerment, and connecting people to others, and most importantly, to themselves. Each week, I will be exploring topics around intuition, how to connect with and trust your internal GPS, that inner compass, which is the sacred container of all your innate wisdom and power. This podcast is an opportunity to pool knowledge from a wide range of amazing people and practitioners and bring together a worldwide community of intuitive souls. I'm so excited to share the wisdom in today's episode with you. So let's get on with the show. Hello and welcome to the Intuition Conversations. I am here speaking with Aglaé Jacob, who is based in Quebec. And so she's up really early today speaking to me. And I'm really, really grateful for this connection. I think we know each other through the Koya community. You're also a Koya teacher, but you are so much more than that. Although I'm sure movement is a big part of the work and the way you're showing up in the world. So let me just go through some of the other things that you bring into your work. You're a registered dietitian, and you know, I think it's more than that. You call yourself a soul nutritionist, which I love that. That is gorgeous. You're a fellow podcaster and you have the Nourishing Podcast. You're a coach and author, and I want to hear more about that. You work with women, and it seems like your whole business is around helping women step into their power through eating, living, showing up in an authentic and nourishing way. So that's how I see you showing up in the world. Aglaé, could you share with us how you see yourself showing up in the world at this time?
Yes, I think you did a really good, you know, recap of all the things. And through my journey as a registered dietitian, it started more clinical and it led me to write a couple of books about digestive health, which was part of my own journey of traveling to Peru in South America to volunteer and search for my life purpose while I was doubting that nutrition was it. And anyway, so it brought me on my own journey of catching a parasite and having my guts completely messed up and working on finding ways to heal myself naturally. Interestingly enough, you know, most of the doctors would say that digestive health doesn't have anything to do with that, that food is not that big of a component in healing digestive health, but it just, my intuition was telling me that there was something more there. But yet what I had learned in school as a typical conventional registered dietitian didn't give me the tools. So I really expanded outside of my box and researched and found so many different tools that I brought to my life, to my body, to heal myself. And I wanted to share that with the world. So it's in my book, Digestive Health with Real Food. So I would say that's a kind of one of the first part of my career. But then I wanted to go beyond that, because even as I healed my gut, I felt like there was always something missing, like this void that I felt within myself. I also, parallel to that whole journey, I struggled with an eating disorder called binge eating disorder. It's like emotional eating, but you know, on the very exponential, I would say, like the swings between trying to restrict and then eating a large amount of food. So there was a lot of, I felt like a fraud as a registered dietitian, because there I was with my eating disorder and not feeling comfortable with my body. And it led me on that quest to discover nourishment. And nourishment is really the portal that allowed me to see that, yes, we do have a body, but we're not our body. And there's so much more than our body, even though it's a vital and essential vehicle for us to live our life. But what about nourishment of the mind, nourishment of the heart, nourishment of the soul? And that's really what opened the door to me, for me, and the door that I want to open for other women as well, so that we can step into the whole of us. And for me, it's about reclaiming our power. It's about dropping the mask. It's about shining more brightly and feeling whole and feeling home all at once. So I'm not sure if I'm even answering your question. I don't remember what it was, but that's a bit of my journey in a nutshell.
I mean, what a gorgeous way you have of explaining that path. And thank you for making it so personal as well, in terms of sharing how your personal and professional have woven together throughout the evolution of your career. It's a really beautiful thing. And I love that you followed your intuition to heal yourself and your gut. And I'd love to hear, as we weave through the conversation, about, you know, we often say that our intuition lives in our stomachs, lives in our gut, lives in our womb space, whatever that space is, however you, you know, however you define it, or wherever that, wherever you feel it in your body. But I'd love to hear about that relationship with healing that part of you, as well as strengthening your intuition. And, you know, I love the idea that you're encouraging women to feel whole and feel at home. Like, that is a beautiful thing. Yeah. So all of that being said, what does intuition mean to you? And how has it shown up in your life, either your personal life or your professional life?
Intuition. I remember, for, you know, as a registered dietitian, the reason why I wanted to get the degrees and, you know, being in the science, because I thought from, you know, the people that I had around me growing up, that's what would give me perhaps approval, would make me feel accepted. So for all of my 20s, I was all like, science was my God, kind of, you know. I was not religious at all, but I felt like if there's a study, if there are numbers to prove it, then that's right. Otherwise, it doesn't exist, almost, kind of. Then in my early 30s, I started reading more personal development book, because I was on that quest. I always felt like there was something missing, and I heard more and more about spirituality and intuition. And every time, like I had this little ding, 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 and, like, I want that. But at some point, at the same time, I felt like, but that's not for me. I don't think I have that. I wish I had. And I'm starting to, you know, accept that it's possible for others. Yeah. And then at some point, I took a lot of courses, did some mentorship, did a lot of programs, and started to get in touch with my own intuition. And it showed up in so many different ways, because, you know, it would not be the natural suggested course that, as an author of a book on digestive health, you know, I decide to take this other direction with my career. But this is just what my intuition is telling me to do. Even personally, with the big things, you know, whether it was to decide to get a divorce or to decide to move here and there, my intuition has always been there, as well as in the tiny little things, like, you know, what should I have for breakfast today? Or what would be nourishing for me today? Or, you know, I'm triggered here. What does my intuition has to tell me about? Oh, perhaps this remind me of a time when I was X, you know, 6 years old, and this happened, and I felt something similar, and now it's time to heal it. So there's just so many ways that intuition can show up personally and professionally. And it's just the way that I see it, it's just an access to something greater, to a more universal intelligence that goes way beyond any studies or science or numbers or stats or Excel spreadsheets could ever tell us.
And so you said it started in your early 30s that the seeking of something bigger outside of, I think, you know, outside of that almost like socially approved way of moving through the world. So, like, you know, you know, if you want to be an expert in something, if you want to have a career in something, you go and get your degrees, you study, you base it all in fact and evidence, and then you put it out into the world, and then you can, you know, you continue that forward. And, you know, I myself, you know, have a few degrees under my belt as well, and followed them for very similar reasons. Very glad I did, but, you know, for similar reasons. And you said you got to a point in your 30s where that curiosity for something bigger, that, you know, that personal development that you maybe saw other people getting involved in, but that, you know, but that you wanted, but almost seemed like at arm's length, oh, that's for someone else. So can you talk about that transition and how intuition guided you through that transition to thinking that the spiritual, you know, spiritual growth, spiritual development, and even spiritual leadership was not just something for other people, but something that you not only could, you know, could internalize for your own self, but then also share with other people?
Yes, yes. And I'm thinking, as you're speaking, what was the bridge? Like, what was the switch? And I think for me, it was really when I started learning about self-love. I took a course with the Path of Self-Love School, and it was like a full year immersion program on the topic of self-love. And it's funny because I actually took that course thinking that I would bring that into my coaching. It was for the women that I was working with. I was not taking it for myself, because, you know, self-love feels like a little, I don't know, like a little I don't know, right? There's such a connotation, like, why? For me, it was always about giving and thinking about others as a people pleaser and being the good girl, and taking time for myself still felt really indulgent and even unnecessary. But as I started taking this program, I realized that, yeah, there's so many different flavors of self-love, and there were different parts of me that I was not accepting, that I was trying to reject, to hide. There's so much shame and guilt in certain areas of my life. And the more I embarked on that healing journey of reintegrating those different parts of myself that I had rejected and disowned and neglected, and the more I started believing in myself a little bit, and the more whole I felt, and the more I started nourishing myself beyond my body, but also nourishing my mind, heart, and soul. And that's why I believe that, for me, the way I experience it, nourishment of the whole self really allows us to find that access point with our intuition. So to be more present, because I think it goes both ways. Nourishment is about intuition, because we need to access our intuition, our inner wisdom, to know what it is that we need to feel nourished. And the more nourished we feel, the more access we have to our intuition, and the stronger and the deeper that connection grow. So I think that it's just, you know, starting somewhere, and it starts getting stronger and deeper, and you know, the more we practice, the easier it gets. And I'm even excited to see, like, 10 years from now, what it's going to look like. Who knows? But it just makes it such a difference in the way that I live my life in the day to day. And it doesn't, I'm not going anywhere. It's not about getting to a certain destination. But right now, just knowing that I have this capacity to access a deeper inner wisdom within myself, that's such a different way to go about in my life.
I love that as, like, almost like the cycle of nourishment and intuition. So the more you create spaces and strengthen that muscle of listening and that inner wisdom, the more you nourish yourself, and the more you nourish yourself, the more you'll be able to listen to yourself and trust yourself. This beautiful, like, self-strengthening modality. I think that's a phenomenal way of looking at it. And I was wondering if you, in terms of the work that you do, what are some of the practices that you encourage the women that you work with to strengthen that cycle of nourishment and intuition, knowing that, you know, some practices work for some people, others, you know, other practices don't work. And so what are some of the things that, if someone's listening to this and they're like, oh, I'm either, you know, I'm at the beginning of this journey with a curiosity into how to nourish myself and how to create more space for self-love and strengthen my inner knowing, or if someone's, you know, like you, that's someone who's living aligned with their intuition every day. So it's almost like, you know, it's almost like breathing. It's like you're checking in with it. So any, you know, and anywhere in between on that intuitive journey, what are some of the practices that you see that inspire and stimulate that nourishment and intuition in the lives of the women you work with?
I think that, as you said, like, it's a beautiful journey, and we're each exactly where we're supposed to be. But what I think, the word slowing down is what comes to me. I think that we all need that. And whether we've been on this path for a long time or whether it's our first step, slowing down is always, always going to help us quiet the background noises of our life. And it's been pretty fast paced. And even with the, you know, current world situation, some things have slowed down, but also the demands of life have not really slowed down for most people. So I feel like slowing down, having spaciousness within our days where we can slow down. And it doesn't mean to sit 1 hour in meditation. I don't even do that. That doesn't work for me. But it can be just, okay, like, I'm just gonna take a deep breath. And that can be slowing down. That could be where it starts, or doing a few deep breaths through the day. Or even when you ask yourself, okay, what am I gonna eat? That, you know, we eat at least 3 times a day, most people, often more. So those are all opportunities to access our intuition. And it may be really hard at first to connect to our intuition, because there are so many things in our mind. Well, you should eat this, you should eat that, from all the messages we receive from society. And this is fattening, this is whatever, like all the labels we may have around food, but using those different times when we're asking ourselves the question, what do I want to eat? What should I eat? To look at that, well, could that thought, it's not serving me. And like kind of doing a little spring cleaning there. And like, what is the truth? And oftentimes it's like breathing, taking a deep breath so that we can breathe ourselves down from our mind into our body and really listen from that place. And I think that's where the Kuo Yai and movement practices, embodied practices, can really help us be more connected. So it doesn't, it's really, you know, just like Kuo Yai, it doesn't matter what it looks like. It's really all about what it feels like. And if we can turn down the volume of the mind who has so much to say and take us in so many directions and see what the body is saying. And usually the voice of our intuition, the voice of our body's inner wisdom is not like this chatter we hear in our mind, like, ah, blah, 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 blah. That's how I feel like the mind, the things with the different voices in our head are with all of those thoughts, but the body, inner wisdom and our intuition, it's actually, I need a good meal with some protein. And, you know, it will just have like the deeper, slower, voice. It's how I feel it. It's not that necessarily that I hear it, but it just feels like there's a depth to a message, that is not taking me all over the place.
I love that comparison to like how your mind speaks in one way, like that's like harried and quick and like, you know, and overstimulated. And, but your body's inner wisdom, your intuition speaks in another way. Like it speaks clearly. It speaks more deeply. It speaks with a slower voice. But yeah, you have to quiet down all of that chatter to be able to access and hear that deeper voice. I'm really fascinated by what you've described. I guess what you described is like intuitive eating and an intuitive eating practice. Could you talk a little bit more about that? And is that part of your coaching? Is that part of the spaces that you hold for women? Because I think one of the things that, you know, a lot of people, but certainly women, either struggle with or at some point in their lives, if not throughout their whole lives, have, you know, battles with themselves or, you know, conditioned ways of thinking about what our bodies should look like, what we should put into them and what health is. And so I'd love to, if you could speak a little bit more deeply about intuitive eating and how that's part of that empowerment work that you do.
Yes, it's definitely a big part of it. And that's what bridged my past career around nutrition and my current one, where it's, so that's why, you know, when people ask me what I do, I empower women to eat and live in a way that's aligned with who they truly are. So sometimes food is the portal to that, but it's just like one way that we start using the intuition. And then there's a ripple effect on all other aspects of our lives. So intuitive eating, it's like, I don't usually use those words because there's a specific training. I didn't do the course. It's not fully aligned with what I believe in. Although the term intuitive eating sounds like perfect and exactly what I've learned to do and what I thought I would never be able to do, because I thought that I needed to control things in my mind. And yeah, as you said, like there's so much pressure for all women. It's everywhere in the magazines, on the media, on Instagram, like there's so much pressure. But I like to use the word embodied eating, where we're really, I like even like my body is relaxing, and this idea of embodiment, which meant absolutely nothing to me a few years ago. I mean, but it's something that cannot, it's hard to explain in word, right? Embodiment, what embodiment is, you need to feel it. It's just like riding a bike. You can learn everything about it in a book, but then do you really know how to ride a bike until you get on the bike? Probably not, right? So I feel like it's the same with embodiment. It's really something that we, as we're on this path of connecting more deeply to our body and our intuition, and being more present with ourselves, it's a natural thing that happens. And with embodied eating, it's being, learning how to be connected to our body in a way that we can choose foods that will make us feel as nourished and as good as possible in the body that we have today. So there's no trying to compromise, to punish, it becomes so important to feel as good as we can in the body that we have as it is today, that it's like it doesn't even cross our minds to choose food that would make us feel bad. It's not that we eat perfect. You know, to me, embodied eating is not about eating perfectly all the time. And it doesn't mean that, oh my God, like my mom made a chocolate cake and, you know, I will, it's not that I will deprive myself of that, but there will not be that kind of feeling of addiction. Like I'm trying to eat to soothe something or to distract myself from what I'm feeling or to numb myself, which I've done so many times in the past. It's being so present in our body and respecting the body and choosing foods that help us feel as good as we can in our body as it is today. And that includes fun food, because I think that's part of nourishing our inner child. And that includes food that feel good for your body. And I cannot tell you, and I cannot tell, you know, every woman, like, this is what you need. Like, if you go to a dietitian or a nutritionist that tells you, like, this is what you eat, this plan, this is a yes list, this is the no list, I would say to go and try another to find another nutritionist that can help you connect to your own intuition and body so that you can get your own answer, because every body is different and only can know what is right for you. And I know that's kind of scary, because many women would like, oh, maybe just tell me what to do. But it's also a beautiful path that can get you to really strengthen and deepen your own intuition through this portal.
Absolutely. It's like the difference, you know, like you said, that difference between seeking someone, you know, seeking a doctor, seeking a nutritionist, seeking a psychologist, seeking somebody to say, tell me how to do it. How did it work mm-hmm. for you? Tell me how to do it and I'll just do the same thing. Yeah. And, you know, it just give me a plan and I'll stick to it. And we all know, how good we are at sticking to plans and New Year's resolutions and whatnot. And it sounds like the practices that you encourage are more about, are deeply intuitive. So it's not about like, here's a plan. Go away. I'll give you the plan and I'll tell you how, you know, I'll tell you what to do. But you, it sounds like you're nurturing practices that encourage people to learn how to do this, how to listen to their bodies, how to listen to those deeper needs, how to quiet in the mind so that they can drop into the body and listen about what, you know, what might feel good. And also probably observing that over time. There's probably a bit of like just that active observation. So, you know, maybe you can talk about what that looks like, but I can imagine it's almost like charting your menstrual cycle. Like you need to start doing it and observing what's happening in your body over the course of, you know, days or weeks or even months to be like, oh, I see a pattern here. I can look at it. It is a bit data oriented. It's a bit scientific, but it's all about you. It's about like, yes. Oh, you know what? I sat down and I had porridge for breakfast. And I noticed that, you know, I had porridge for breakfast 3 days in a row, or oatmeal for those folks in America. I had porridge and like, you know, I noticed I had porridge and a cup of tea or porridge and a cup of coffee. And I noticed that I wasn't really hungry again, or I wasn't really craving any food until 1 o'clock. But on the day that I had a piece of toast and, you know, or like I had for breakfast this morning, a delicious lemon drizzle hot crust bun, because it's almost Easter and they're amazing. Or like, you know, I had that at 9 o'clock, and by 10 o'clock, I was like, oh, I want another hot crust bun. Mm. So it's just kind of, and like, and, you know, and then I had another hot crust bun. And then an hour later, I was still hungry. So, and you know, so it's like, it's about like, giving yourself those opportunities to do a bit of reflection in that way, but also I'm guessing in other ways too. So can you talk about some of those other ways? But it's a practice that I think, you know, it's this practice. It's not like, here's a plan, go away and do it. Everything will be fine. Your nutrition will be sorted. It's like, no, actually it's a deeper relationship with yourself. And that relationship with yourself is the lens through which you develop a deeper relationship with food.
Exactly. And that, you know, all wrapped with so much gentleness and compassion and in the space of non-judgment and just curiosity, like just learning and I think that there's a lot of inner child work that can be done there, because all of these thoughts, because we've a lot of messages that came from other people or from society or from the magazines have been a little bit, you know, ingrained in our head about what it should look like, what we should eat, what we shouldn't eat, or perhaps what some doctors even have told us. But and I think that it's a lot about learning how to reparent ourselves and mother our own self, like, because it happens to everyone that sometimes we may eat our emotions or we may overeat and feel a little stuffed. But, you know, and taking that opportunity So it's really about self-awareness. Like what is your reaction? Are you starting to self-bully yourself and criticize yourself? Like, oh my God, what have you done this? I know you can never eat this again, or you'll need to go strict, you know, on Monday, or whatever those thoughts are. But if we bring it back, like, how would you speak to your child or children, if you have some, or to any young beings that you can imagine in your life, like you would never say those things to them. Like, and yet we do that to ourselves. So I think that a big part of the practice is to be able to discern between those different thoughts and choose a more empowering, and gentle, more feminine way, because I think it goes back to the masculine and feminine. A lot of what we've been taught about food and nutrition is in a very masculine approach. This is good. This is bad. This is right. This is wrong. This is healthy. This is unhealthy. And the numbers and the macros of the carbs and, you know, we've made it. It's all very useful. I mean, I studied a lot of that and it's still very useful, but weaving in the feminine in that, more gentleness, more intuition based, like connecting to the different feelings.
Bringing in that, that generally that our approach to nutrition and eating is a very binary, very linear mm-hmm. one. Like you said, it's, you know, this food is good and this food is bad, you know, as opposed to like you said, and that's a very masculine kind of way of showing up in the world in terms of our approach to food and nutrition. But yeah, weaving in that feminine intuitive, like, you know, taking that step back, creating space to listen to the body, to listen to the deeper needs and, you know, coming all the way back to nourishment, that, you know, to eat in a way that, like, you know, I think the masculine way like tells us what nourishment is, and the feminine way of eating allows us to make those decisions for ourselves. So it's almost a reclamation of that, and an empowering thing to say, you know, I can learn all about it, but what actually works for me in this body, in this moment,
right? Exactly. Because it can change every day, every moment. Yeah.
And, you know, there's something about what you said about like learning how to reparent and trust yourself as part of this process, in that we, you know, over time, and maybe even from the time when we're very young, you know, we're taught, you know, and I think about this in terms of the way I parent my son sometimes as well, and how disempowering I probably am to him when I'm just like, eat your dinner. That's what we have. Just please eat it. but like, you know, there are lots of ways that, whether that's in our family units, whether that's in school, whether that's in wider society and friend groups, from like an early age, you know, we begin to externalize the shoulds and what we think and how we should, you know, and how we should act. And sometimes that takes us away from the trust that we have in our own ability to discern what's right for us. And particularly, I love that analogy of, you know, that in, you know, through that self-awareness, we can learn how to trust ourselves again and reparent ourselves in a way, like, you know, showing up with care and compassion and curiosity and exploration as we learn how to move through the world through eating and, you know, and like you said, in the rest of life. So it's not just about how you eat, but how you live. So, you know, I was wondering if you could talk about if there's anything else you wanted to say around what blocks intuition and, you know, in addition to the slowing down and creating space, if there are any other practices that can overcome those blocks and help people trust and reparent themselves again.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, the things that really block the intuition, whether it's with eating or anything else in our life, it's just the fast paced life and wounds that haven't been attended to, like past and because when we're triggered, when something happens and we snap or we go into that place, like from a scale of 0 to 10 in like 1 minute, like whether we're angry, frustrated or sad or feeling lonely or feeling bored or whatever it is, I think that then it becomes really harder to connect with our intuition. Other things that can block our intuition is all this knowledge, this information that is constantly being dumped in our mind, and that make it harder for us to discern what is ours, what is not ours. And then, you know, with all of this inner chatter, it can become pretty loud. So I think that, having mentioned those blocks, the different practices that can help us overcome those blocks with our eating and our day to the way we live our life is, as we said earlier, slowing down. But taking these, well, I think that embodiment movement practices are just so key, because it really gives us that space to move with whatever we're feeling. It's such a beautiful way to learn that it's not about what it looks like, it's about what it feels like. You know, how do you move when nobody tells you what to do? And of course, there's part of a Kwoya class where there's more guidance, but other parts, like for me, when I started Kwoya, like when there was no guidance, I'm like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. Can we move on to the next part? And so that really allows us to expand also our capacity to feel good in our body, because you know, there's a no pain, no gain kind of thing that we receive from society when we think that, you know, the harder we work out at the gym, or the more it hurts, the better it is. Like that, I don't want to live in that kind of world. So we need to put that behind. And that's why embodiment practices and anything that makes us feel good. Like I have this body butter here. And I just like when you put it on your body, on your hands, like just being there, and instead of being thinking about a thousand different things at once at the same time, like really being there and applying it in a loving way. And even at this, I think the one of the most important practice besides slowing down is the power of your intention, of being able to use our intention and infuse our intention. And even, you know, self-love or loving our body may feel like impossible, depending on where we are on that journey. And if it is, it's okay. But maybe trying to come to a place of more neutrality, like instead of applying your cream, whatever it is, like in a fast, because I just need to check that off the to-do list, or whether it's with eating or moving, can it be in a place of more neutrality and slowly infusing the intention, or choosing an intention of gentleness or presence? Like it doesn't need to be about self-love or feeling like your body is a sacred temple, if that feels like, I don't know if I can even get there. And perhaps you will, perhaps you won't, it doesn't matter. But if we can just untangle some of the nuts with more presence by slowing down and by infusing intentions that serve us more than just being stuck in the patterns that we may have been stuck in the past.
Yeah, that you know, that there's a lot about like self-love and body positivity, and I think on the edges of that movement are like around body neutrality and self-neutrality. So, you know, sometimes when we're coming from places of you know, potentially being wounded, when we come from places of having complicated relationships with our body and with nutrition and with ourselves, with all parts of ourselves, that sometimes that in the spaces, sometimes in spiritual spaces, it feels like, oh, you got to jump right to loving yourself and being completely empowered and accepting yourself fully. And that's a bit, seems a bit unrealistic for, mm-hmm. you know, certainly for a lot of the women I work with, that like, yeah, that might be a goal, but like, just as you were talking about the beginning of your story, like that seems like, oh, that self-love, that body positivity, that whole thing, that's for somebody else. That's not for mm-hmm. me. And so as opposed to like one of the most inclusive ways to be a practitioner, I think is allowing for people to meet themselves where they are right now, and to also like it, you know, being in your body in the moment, and like, and getting rid of those expectations and that rule book that we can have even in spiritual and self-development, and slowing down and just kind of noticing where we are today, and noticing that, like, you know, like you said, coming back to the intention, you know, the intention doesn't have to be like, today I'm going to love and accept my full self, when maybe that's just never something that's ever happened for you before. And that's a great, you know, that's holding that space for your highest vision is important. But at the same time, like that realistic meeting myself where I am and knowing ever more who I am, maybe it's about just moving it a little bit and moving it a little bit and moving it just a little bit more every day. And like we say in Kwoya, like, can you open your heart just a little bit more? We're not saying like crack yourself open. That's not the invitation. I mean, if that's where your heart wants to go today, yeah, go for it. Crack yourself open. But you, the muscle that we're exercising, and I think all of these practices are that we're encouraging the exercise of, is noticing where you are in and of yourself and what feels right, what feels safe, what feels accessible to you today. And, you know, the intention, and, you know, setting that intention, drawing a circle around this experience, making it a bit sacred, and just saying, you know, today's intention, you know, if I'm really reading myself, today's intention is like, you know, if I can take, I think there's a woman in my membership portal, I think, you know, her intention was like, if I can just show up like 1% more for myself every day, or maybe 5% more for myself every month, like, you know, that would be great. I'd feel really great if I can show up for myself just 1% more. And I think like we underestimate that 1%, because sometimes it's in that 1% plus 1% plus 1%. It's where that, like, when you add it all up collectively, that's like, you can look back and see, actually, there's a distance traveled there. And, you know, this idea that like to move with feeling, and, you know, how that kind of, that movement is a metaphor for the wider work that we can do outside of those movement spaces. But it's in that, you know, having a safe place to practice being present and expanding, as we say, the capacity to potentially feel good in your body. And that, you know, I remember my first Koya class, you know, I don't know, about 5 years ago now, with Kate Taylor. And there were a few things that stuck out for me in that, you know, that class. Well, halfway through, I was like, I'm going to become a teacher. I love this. I want to teach it. I love this. This is the best thing I've ever done. But there was also, you know, like from, you know, choosing an Oracle card, and then Kate saying, oh, you get to keep it. And my OCD brain going like, what? You're going to break a deck? I get to keep this card? I don't understand. How is this possible? To like, and that taking me immediately out, and Kate being like, no, Megan, that's the way, that's what we do. That's every Koya class. Like, you know, it's my gift to you, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, mind blown in the first 10 minutes. And then we began the movement. And like, you know, I remember being, you know, I remember like at the end of Kate's holding space in the dancing your yoga's prayer part of a Koya class, where we, you know, take the intention we set at the beginning of a Koya class, and we notice what it would feel like in our bodies to move with that. Like, what is the expression of our intention look like through our bodies? And Kate kind of took us through a few warriors, and then she was like, and now just do what your body wants to do. And I was like, being a yoga teacher and having practiced yoga a lot, and then having a teacher say, just kind of do whatever your body wants to do and dance it. And I was like, what? I didn't know what to do with that. And then, I was like, okay, keep my heart, crack it open a little bit, just a little bit. I'm just going to see what happens. I'm just going to let my body lead and just see. And that happens, you know, that happened so many times in the rest of that class. And that's happened thousands of times in the movement practices that I've either taught or been a part of. And it is this, you know, it is this beautiful surrendering and then reclaiming of that. And then the noticing of what comes up in that process. And I think that's a lot about, you know, coming back to intuition. It's in those spaces that we allow our intuition to work, and then we encourage them and invite, we encourage that part of ourselves, that, you know, wise part of ourselves that's always there. We're waiting for us to remember it, to take up a little bit more space. And so, you know, I'm a huge fan of embodiment. I mean, and, you know, they say like anyone who has a body can engage in embodiment practices, and it's, you know, like it can be sometimes just as simple as, you know, if you can imagine, there's an intuition. No, what is, I forget her name. I'll put a note in, it's the woman who does How to Do the Work, Dr. Nicole LaPera. That's who it is. Okay. Remembered it. Okay. And she says, like, she takes you through, like, if you can imagine a lemon, like closing your eyes and imagine a lemon, imagine like the outside of the lemon, imagine cutting into it in the spray, imagine putting the lemon to your lips, imagine if like that lemon juice got cut, you know, got into a little cut on your finger. Like if you can, if, you know, all of that, envisioning all of those things, that's an embodiment practice that takes you into a multi-sensory experience. And so we can do that with a lemon, and we can do that with ourselves. So I was wondering if there is anything else you'd like to add, or in particular, if you'd like to talk about a time or a way that intuition has sort of shown up for you in a big or a small way recently in your life, and sort of what the benefits of living intuitively have been for you.
I think that what comes to me right now, because there's so many different moments, and some are very like super simple, but they seem extraordinary when we allow them to happen. But it's just that the more we start living this way, and I think that living from soul and really living with intuitive practices, regularly embedded in our life is really about how we can access our intuition, how we can listen to our intuition and how we can trust that intuition and then eventually act on it. And I think that one thing that I heard that really stuck with me from my mentor on the Path of Self-Love School, Christina Rilo, she said that there are no coincidences. You can just take on that belief that there are no coincidences, because too often we're like, oh, this happened, but you know, does it really mean that, you know, it's a message for me, or, you know, it's a sign from the universe? Because sometimes it's so easy to dismiss those little synchronicities in our life. And I think that, you know, what if you decided to take on that belief that there are no coincidences and just live a day like that and see if you receive more messages from the universe? It can be a little thing, like you're thinking about something and then you look at the clock, it's 11:11, and it's like, oh, okay, maybe that's a confirmation. What if it was not a coincidence, and just living from that place? And so there are many big stories where my intuition showed up and really allowed me to realign myself on a path that was more serving me. But just me being right here, I think it's a result of that, and of trying to listen and connect to my intuition, listen to my intuition, trust my intuition, and act on it. And this career path that it has taken me on, and all of the things, the beautiful things that are happening in my life, doesn't mean it's perfect. There are still challenges, and that's still ways that our intuitions can teach us and allow us to grow. But yeah, just being here right now, and the fact that, you know, the listeners that will be listening to this in this beautiful time space, that's a result of our intuition and all of those little things that are being pulled by the universe. And what was the other question? And the benefits of following our intuition is really that the more aligned we are with our intuition, I feel like the rest of our lives start aligning itself with, so it's really an inside out kind of process. The work is happening on the inside for ourselves, but as a result, things start changing on the outside. And my life now compared to 5 years ago is completely different. And now it looks a lot more like me. I felt like my life 5 years ago didn't look like me anymore. It's been quite a journey to realign, listen to my intuition, and step by step, things start changing.
Yeah, I think that's a phenomenal benefit that you live more in alignment. As you said, like in it, living in an authentic and nourishing way, what you encourage your clients and the women that you work with to do is one of the biggest benefits for you of living in this way and living a life that feels and looks more like you. And that's, mm-hmm. you know, and that speaks of alignment. And I think that that's a wonderful, wonderful sentiment mm-hmm. to round up our conversation. But before we go, could you tell everyone that's listening the best way to connect with you in the world right now?
Yeah, that would probably be on Instagram. Yes. So my handle is Radicata Nutrition, RADICATA Nutrition. And Radicata, just as a sideway, means roots in Latin. It comes from that word. So it's really going to the root of nutrition, which is so much more than nutrition. So Radicata Nutrition on Instagram. I post pretty regularly. So that's a good way if anyone wants to DM me any questions and find more about what I do. Everything's there.
Beautiful. Thank you so, so much for your time. This has been a fascinating conversation, and I've learned loads and been reminded of loads as well. So thank you. And yeah, I look forward to our paths crossing again soon.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I hope it spoke to your heart and inspired you to connect to your own intuition. Check out the show notes for more information on the things discussed in this episode and details of how to connect with our amazing speaker. I would love to hear your feedback, and you can find me over at Koya with Megan on Instagram and on my website, meganfield.com. I would adore it if you would leave a review, and please don't forget to hit follow if you want the Intuition Conversations to automatically be on your phone every week. I can't wait to speak with you on the next episode.